Hello, everybody. Welcome to the Pick Six Podcast, 4th of July edition, 3rd of July edition. I'm Sam McEwen along with Chris Hetty. Evan Bland is on furlough. He'll be back next week. I won't. I will be on vacation. So I go furlough, week work, vacation. So I think I may actually try to get on the podcast next week. If you guys have it on Friday, I think I'll be back. The original vacation plans for the McEwen family were to go visit my wife's extended family and all of her old friends in Cleveland, Ohio, which we were going to do over the course of 10 days. That was going to be like the trip back to my wife's childhood. And of course, the coronavirus has postponed that, unfortunately. So we'll have to experience that perhaps next year. So we're going to go to Mount Rushmore.
Are you really?
Yeah, we're going to be there about 3 or 4 days after Trump. So I don't know. I assume it'll be a little quieter, but yeah, we're going to go to the Black Hills and Custer State Park and Mount Rushmore and just see those things. And it's a beautiful part of the country. It's relatively close by, and it kind of came down to we were either going to go to Yellowstone or Rushmore. And my understanding is that Yellowstone is very, very busy right now.
It's think
kind of a zoo. True.
Yeah, I've seen and that as well.
The other thing that I relayed to my wife was that if you what I read online was you can go to Yellowstone and have a great time, but you have to get up pretty early in the morning to go to the things. Otherwise, you're going to be kind of stuck in lines or stuck in traffic part of the day. And my wife was like, I guess we're not going there. So we're not going somewhere to wake up at 6:30 in the morning.
Yeah,
whatever. I just read a couple of reviews online. It's like this summer, if you're going to go to Yellowstone, you can have a lot of fun, but you have to do it pretty early in the morning.
And right,
it was like, yeah, we're not going to be doing that. So we're going to go to the Rushmore complex, and hopefully that is a lot of fun. We'll be doing that next week, but I think we'll be back by Friday. So we're going to leave right after the 4th of July, and then we're going to head. I think we'll be back by then. So if you guys have a podcast next week, I guess I will be on it. Okay. Happy 4th of July to you, Chris.
You said you're going
to Iowa.
I am. Yes. Iowa. My wife is in board study mode. And so I actually asked her yesterday. I was like, so are you sure it's okay that I'm going to be gone this weekend and kind of leave you here alone? She was like, that's more than okay.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
That's good.
So, yeah, my brother, they just moved into a new house and they've got some land. So we're pretty sure that there is fish in the stream behind his house. So we are going to test that theory.
Good.
So we're going to do that and just kind of hang out.
What was your favorite, firework growing up?
I mean, like all kids, I liked just like the finale. Right? Mm-hmm. The finale is always great. We used to always go to the, so where I grew up in Kansas, fireworks were not allowed, in the suburbs. Like they could only be shut off in specific parks. And so people would flock to these parks and they would set off fireworks. And so we would always go there and sit up on this giant hill and watch fireworks. And they would like, it was right next to the highway. And it was always cool because when the fireworks were over, all the smoke would like hang over the highway and like go back into the city, which was kind of cool.
Yeah.
Which is a long way of saying the one that like blows up and then all the individual little things crackle. You know what I mean? Yeah. So it's like a twofer.
The crackle. I don't know what it's called.
I'm sure there's somebody listening that does. No. Because there's this like subculture of people who are super into the like
right
sales
for and shells
purchase and, yeah. And yeah they know and, all that and
I knew somebody who is does like to design them, you know.
Oh really?
Yeah. Oh yeah, like they put on their own shows because they learned how. Okay.
Sure.
Yeah, when I was a kid, so Rosenblatt obviously has been torn down, but there used to be a really cool show. It's kind of moved to Warner Park, but it's a little different because at Rosenblatt, when you did it, a lot of people could sit on the bridge, the bridge that goes over Interstate 80, and they close it off and you blanket, and they'd shoot the they'd shoot the fireworks over like kind of a corner of the stadium. It was pretty amazing. Mm-hmm. So that was sort of a civic thing that a lot of people used to do. That it's harder to do now. Like, I know they can do things at TD Ameritrade, and they were. The Omaha World Herald fireworks show after the Home Run Derby is very, very cool. It was a little different at Rosenblatt just because there was a bridge, and it just felt, I don't know, it just felt like a different time, and it may be a different part of Omaha. But the last couple of years we had gone to the World Herald show at TD Ameritrade, and that's not happening, right? So
but I know the Warner Park one is.
The Warner Park one is. My favorite firework growing up was just unbelievably unsafe, and that would be the bottle rocket.
As
a kid in, you know, this is in the 1980s, you would take a bottle rocket, and you'd put it in bottles, or you'd put it in some other container, or you would hold it in your hands and you would, we used to have, let's be honest, they were somewhere along the lines of bottle rocket wars.
Sure.
And it was not even, our old neighborhood used to have kind of like a block party. It was about maybe 10, 12 families that would kind of coagulate at the corner of A Street and I think 126th. And yeah, so during the course of the day, there'd be water and balloon fights. At some point, there'd be about, you know, 100 bottle rockets shot off to the various houses, over fences, things like that. They're remarkably, remarkably unsafe.
Oh, yeah.
But that is exactly what my favorite one was as an 8-year-old, 9-year-old boy.
There used to be our version was like Roman candles.
Oh, yeah.
Those are a good one. Which again,
they're even more unsafe.
Yeah. Like this is completely unsafe behavior. So please do not follow our. Well,
yeah. Roman candles are a little bit more predictable in this regard because they do kind of go straight. Like bottle rockets can go anywhere.
Yeah. And so second quick story, my grandfather, they lived in Grand Island, and every year he would, save like 4 bottle rockets in the summer.
Yeah.
And then in the winter they lived on a lake. And in the winter, when there were ducks that were sitting on the lake that shouldn't have been for whatever reason, he would get a bottle rocket and he would shoot it out onto the lake near the duck. And then the bottle rocket would explode and then the duck would fly away.
That's not good. that's the animal unkindness. Never did the animal unkindness part. We would put it toward human beings.
Sure. Yeah. He wasn't trying to kill the duck. He was trying to scare it away.
He was trying to scare them off. I get that. Well, you are going to catch a bunch of fish. I hope you eat them.
Clean. We'll see. Yeah, maybe. Yeah. I don't know. I don't know.
Are there trout in Iowa? I don't know.
My brother works in government, essentially, and he sent an email to somebody in the Iowa government and asked, he basically was like, hey, is there fish in this stream? And instead of saying yes or no, he got this like long detailed explanation of like, if there were, this is where they would be coming from. And this is where they would be going. And this is what water they would be like all. And so we are pretty sure, I don't think I saw the word trout in there, but
bluegill.
Yeah, that's probably what it is.
And perch.
Carp.
Well, we're going to talk about college football now. That's a nice segue. We'll get there though. I'm going to tell everybody again, we're so thankful for our sponsor, the Schwalbach Agency. Team Schwalbach is a family-owned Allstate insurance agency with 4 licensed insurance pros saving thousands of Nebraska Husker fans' money. They sell homeowner, auto, life, and flood insurance across Nebraska, and they also insure all the big boy toys, many of which will be used this 4th of July weekend. It's 194 degrees out, so I would hope they would be. Motorcycles, boats, RVs, off-road vehicles. RVs are a really good thing to have right now, and you should have them insured through the Schwalbach Agency because, of course, in an RV, you can stay with your family and socially distance. If you've had your roof replaced in the last 5 years, and there's been some storms here in Omaha and Lincoln last week, give Darrell Schwalbach, Kyle Schwalbach, Nancy Mossack, or Kyle Murdoch a call at 402-590-5200. They can help you save a bundle. Free, no obligation, insurance reviews and quotes. They're going to make sure that all of their fellow Nebraska fans are properly protected. Again, you can reach the Schwalbach Agency at 402-590-5200 or www.nebraskaallstate.com. That's www.nebraskaallstate.com. Thankful for their sponsorship. So on Monday, Scott Frost sat down with a couple of media members. We were one of those. And we had a long and interesting conversation, not only about Nebraska's efforts to bring athletes back safely to campus and how they did that over the course of really 2 months, 2 or 3 months, but also the prospects of playing college football in the fall. We touch briefly on what they've done. They kind of carried it out over the course of 2 or 3 months. They did that with the safety in mind, not only for the student athletes, but for potential community spread. I think based on the numbers that we have seen over the last month, I'd say Nebraska's done a pretty good job of advising its student athletes not to go and potentially spread COVID-19 unsafely. In testing 250 staff and athletes, they've had 6 positive tests, 3 of which have nothing to do with Nebraska because they came back to Nebraska with it, and then 3 more that tested positive. And one of those was a, we think you might have it for reasons completely unrelated to working out with Nebraska athletes. It was basically Nebraska having a smart contact trace hunch and that bearing out to be true. So Nebraska was doing diligent enough work with its own athletes that they were sort of thinking about contact tracing and thinking about where this particular athlete may have been or whom they might have been hanging out with and figuring we need to test. And they got it right. So the operation that Nebraska, both Scott Frost, Jared Lambert, Andrew Sims, Zach Duvall, Dave Ellis, a couple of folks from UNMC, the operation they're running is pretty in-depth and impressive, right? So it gives you a sense of what an organization with money, which Nebraska has, and with resources and staffing, which Nebraska also has, can pull off in a short amount of time if the will and the interest is there. And so Nebraska's been able to keep most of its athletes, but more importantly, the community as well, pretty safe. That's sort of the overview of what has happened up to this point. The more interesting part of the conversation, obviously, is what's going to happen from here. And at this particular moment, Scott Frost's his comments on Monday, I thought were very interesting in the sense of he basically said, we're going to keep testing. We're going to keep doing the things that we're doing. But once the season begins, even if we test once a week and say we've got a test on Wednesday because the virus doesn't reveal itself per se as symptomatic or even showing up until 48 or 72 hours after the first contact, even if we test on Wednesday to see if they got it the previous week, we won't know until Thursday if they tested positive, one. Two, by then, they will have already been practicing for multiple days. 3, if somebody picked it up in the community on a Monday or a Tuesday, they won't test positive on Wednesday. 4, even if they test negative and they didn't get it on Monday or Tuesday, if it's an away game or somewhere else, they're gonna come in contact with so many different kinds of people that they might pick it up on Friday or Saturday and wouldn't be picked up until the next Sunday. 5, they could spread that to anybody as a result, both in the community, possibly in the community, but also among players. The case that Scott Frost was essentially laying out is, even if you test, and you test rigorously, you could test many, many times during the course of a week, and it's still possible that you're going to have a coronavirus case that slips through, especially if it's asymptomatic. His argument was, until we get to a point where we focus only on symptomatic cases, in other words, this person has a symptom, you pull them out, you isolate them, you quarantine them, until you get to a point where you're talking about what some people might call a coronavirus case as opposed to a coronavirus positive test, it's going to be hard to play the game of football. And there is some, most people would say that every positive test is a case. Some people would say, well, a case isn't necessarily whether you have the coronavirus in you. It's whether it's doing something. The problem with the second definition, of course, is that there's some evidence of some percentage of asymptomatic spread. And if an asymptomatic carrier can spread it to somebody, that somebody might get symptoms. So on and so forth. So there's a lot going on in that conversation. But Frost's general gist was, unless the mindset about how we think about the virus changes, it's going to be very hard to convince people or make people understand that positive test cases are going to come up. And the minute that happens, people may want to shut down the sport because they'll say it's unsafe. That's one. Two, this week we have seen a huge ramp up in the last 2 weeks, a huge ramp up in the number of cases. The number of positive tests, i.e. the number of cases, an increase in hospitalizations. I think not necessarily an increase in deaths in every place, but deaths are a lagging indicator, and people are able to take care of folks well enough that if someone does die, sometimes they don't die for a month. It's not we're not in the New York City situation where people show up to the hospital and they're dead within 36 hours. We just aren't there at this moment. And so we don't know exactly what the death indicator is going to be, because that's probably 3-4 weeks off, but the cases are going way up. I think we had more than 50,000 the last 3 or 4 days. Mm-hmm. We're doing 500,000, 600,000 tests every day. And when you get up into those numbers, it's somewhat inevitable that you're going to get some high percentages. And some of the highest percentages are in states that have a lot of college football teams: California, Texas, Florida, and Arizona. Arizona only has, I don't know, 3. California's got a lot more than 3. I mean, California's got, I don't know, 15.
Texas has probably quite a few as well, yeah.
Texas has, I believe, the most. You start getting into those numbers, and you're talking, it affects the Big 12, it affects the SEC, it affects the AAC, it affects the Sun Belt, it affects, I think, Conference USA. So you start dotting that, and then Florida's got a bunch too. Florida, Florida State, Miami, Florida Atlantic, Florida National, UCF, USF, all of the FCS teams down there, and there's quite a few of those too. You start to see what's going to happen. That right now at this particular moment, we're on high alert for whether the season's going to happen or not. And I know that Larry Scott's been doing interviews. Larry Scott is a mediocre commissioner at best, but the fact that he's talking a lot obviously gets media attention. And he said to the San Jose Mercury News, "I still want to be cautiously optimistic, but this is important to read. But if there's no change in society's response and behavior, which results in the quick flattening of the curve and a decrease in the spread of the virus, that would lead to a much more pessimistic view about our campuses being able to open and our ability to play college sports. I.e., unless America changes its behavior and the cases go down, there isn't going to be football." What have been your collective thoughts this week, Chris, about the things that you've been reading and seeing?
Yeah. I mean, first off, the first thing that, to just kind of respond to Nebraska specific, the thing that made me feel most comfortable about their response, Nebraska's response, is I think it was Jared or maybe it was Scott that had said they are basically certain that there wasn't community spread from the football team into the community, like that there wasn't, they didn't go. That's where right now it's super important. And they obviously understand that. And when you start looking at how the outbreak at K-State happened, or, you know, Clemson or LSU, I mean, these are kids going out to parties or going out to dinner or whatever, and that's how they contract it. But they could also be the opposite, where they could bring it out. So it's important that this population increase in all these small towns from all these athletes that are there, that those athletes, when they are do test positive, they are quarantined and all that. So that's really encouraging. I mean, I think that this week has been interesting, and it essentially, I think the wind blows with the way the cases go. I mean, I think a month ago cases were going down and people felt really good about the potential of athletics in the fall. And now cases are going back up, and that makes people uncomfortable to think about specifically college athletics in the fall. I think Scott Frost and Larry Scott are actually pretty similar in the way that they're talking, which is essentially, if there's not some type of change, then there's not going to be football. And I think what we've seen, or at least from what I can gather from the last couple months, is that Americans are typically resistant to change, particularly very quickly. I mean, even saying, hey, change some of your behavior to wear a mask is something that's like radical and people don't like to talk about. And so what needs to happen, yes, is cases need to go down. And because, especially in these small towns with college athletics, it's so different than the MLB or the NFL, where these kids are going to be going to class, or they're going to be going to dinner. Or again, like, you can tell your team, hey, it's Friday, please stay at home. But like, good luck. It's college. Kids are going to go to parties. And it's just going to be really, really difficult to make it, you know, it's going to be really difficult to basically have no cases at all. And I think that Scott Frost's theory of when we can only worry about symptomatic players, that's when it becomes, you know, that's when we can have football. I think that that's probably true, but I don't envision that happening in the fall. I mean, I think just there's going to be kind of a breaking point in the next 3 or 4 weeks where there needs to be some sort of definitive decision on whether or not this is going to happen. And this week, I think, was another pessimistic week where, you know, you see USC is not going to have in-person classes anymore. And there was I can't remember who it was, Louisiana Lafayette maybe, canceled a game against Navy. And
yeah, it was Lafayette College.
Yeah. So what is that? I mean, so
FCS or something.
Yeah. So I mean, now again, that's a small indicator, but I mean, like you've said with the Ivy League, whatever the Ivy League does, pay attention.
Oh, yeah.
And so I just think in general, people are very uncomfortable. Cause I tweeted out a poll earlier this week on Monday, essentially asking, like, do you think that college football is going to be happening? And again, a month ago, I think a lot of people would have said yes, or that they would have said, why wouldn't there be? Because cases are going down and we need it for this and we need it for that. Right. And I'll pull it up, but more than 50% said they were worried about college football happening, which was notable to me. And
oh, yeah.
So here's what it was. 7% said very confident. 21% said somewhat confident. 54% said hopeful but worried. Mm-hmm. And then 17% said no way there's a season. And that 17% was notable to me because I didn't – that's a pretty, like, definitive answer that I didn't really expect. But I think people are being a little bit more concerned about the health and safety of student-athletes and also potential spread beyond college sports into professors' offices or things like that. Right. So, yeah, I mean, I think this week was – not a great one when you think about fall sports.
Right. Well, you know, I think there's a couple different things at play. First of all, I agree with you that the optimism was higher, you know, 2-3 weeks ago. Most of the American economies were not really opening up until late May or early June. Some of them opened up in mid-May, early June, but it was going to take time, inevitably, for once those economies started to open up, it was going to take inevitable time for some of the case rises to happen. The positive tests that we're seeing now didn't happen this week. They happened a week before, 2 weeks ago, 3 weeks ago even, as more people are going in and getting symptomatic tests. I mean, they're going in and saying, I have symptoms, I'm coming in, I'm getting tests, or employers are sending them to get tests as more businesses and social events open back up. You're seeing more and more people going in and getting tests. Either they're mild symptomatic or they're serious symptomatic. And then there are a lot of people who are getting contact trace and then being tested as asymptomatic. And so those case numbers were lower in June, and they were inevitable to rise because we had, you know, quite a bit of lockdown, quite a bit of social distancing, not a ton, maybe a ton of mask wearing, but a lot of social distancing in April and May. Then things began to open back up. As things incrementally opened back up, it was sort of inevitable that we were going to see higher number of positive tests and even a higher percentage of positive tests. So I feel like the month of June was kind of a quieter month, in part because we were waiting to see when those numbers came back. now that we're starting to turn the corner toward returning not only college football, but Major League Baseball and NBA, now you're starting to see the reticence and sort of the uncertainty kick back into gear. I'm not sure that anyone is really ready for sports to come back, really on any level, with the exception of NASCAR races and professional golf. And that, I don't know that there's a lot of appetite for basketball. I think it's probably going to come back. But as we get closer and closer and closer, you have to watch the athletes and see if the athletes really want to do this. Major League Baseball's kind of the same thing. We're going to find out. Because I think there are reasons for this above and beyond just the pandemic. I think we're increasingly in an environment where, disdain for institutions and a desire to remove oneself or boycott an institution is becoming a stronger and stronger feeling. And so as a result, I think you're seeing more and more professional athletes questioning whether they should be doing X or Y, determining, you know, at looking at risk, determining whether this is what they want to do, all of these different topics. It's especially exacerbated at the collegiate level because they are amateurs and they don't necessarily make any money, and you have to balance their desire to play against the collective well-being that we now seem to feel for them as a result of a lot of different discussions that have gone on prior to the pandemic, but now in the pandemic proper. The argument that I presented to Frost on Monday, and he agreed, was that it's not likely that these athletes who are in question are going to be safer without any incentive to play the sport. In other words, they're not going to live, in their houses like monks for the next 4 months if there's no college football. You can't, if the argument is college students are college students, and then the same argument would follow that a motivation to stay as safe as possible, like playing a season, would be a good governor against people doing whatever they want to do and being unsafe. And so it's quite possible and even likely that college football players are going to get the coronavirus if there is no season. Like, it's not going to not playing the season is not a guard against transmission of the disease. Most of the disease contraction up to this point has been at parties or whatever. So it's quite possible that if the football provides an incentive to actually live out in the community in a safer manner, if you remove that incentive, it's not likely that the people who aren't playing football and don't have the structure of that are going to feel, you know, like chagrined and say, well, as a result of not being able to play, I will spend the next 4 months of my life just inside my house and doing everything that people tell me to do. So that's one of the issues at hand. The other issue, though, and I think this is important, is that a lot of the people who control the sport and govern it, university presidents, the NCAA, conference commissioners, to some degree ADs, a few coaches, I think they feel a little bit like the United States as a whole is not doing what it needs to be doing in order to make this safe. We want people to wear masks. We want the cases to go down. And if they don't go down, we're not going to do this. And so my thought process on that is, if college football fans want college football to come back, and they might want to start doing the things that the people who control college football, and by that I include certain media voices, they might want to start doing the things that those people think they should be doing, whether they like doing them or not. Whether they think that those things are worth doing or not, and to be clear, I'm on the side of science, and I'm on the side of our editorials, and on the side of our UNMC doctors and Bryan Health doctors down in Lincoln and all that. I'm on that side. But speaking to the fans who aren't, if you want what you want, you may want to do the things that the people who run the sport want you to do, whether you like it or not. If someone's going to blink in the course of this conversation about whether college football comes back or not, it isn't going to be the sports leader. That it won't. Mm-hmm. They're not going to bring it back if the cases don't go down and you don't start seeing a higher adherence to mask rates.
And, I mean, the thing, I agree, that should have been, like, there would have been an even likelier, there's a better chance that the season happens if that advice was being followed a month and a half ago. You know what I mean?
Well, yeah.
Now, if people should follow it no matter what.
Well, sure.
But if people would have followed a month and a half ago, there's an even better chance now. And now what you worry is, even if people follow it now, now I'm saying wear a mask, I agree with you, Sam. But that's where I think some of the worry is, where even if they do everything right over the next month and a half,
right,
cases do start to dip a little bit, that it still maybe isn't enough. And
well, yeah, it may not be.
But you hope it is. Mm-hmm. But I agree, it comes to a point where, and you've really seen it over the last week, I think, of coaches and athletic directors are really, really starting to push socially distance, like start wearing a mask. Pete Ricketts said yesterday, you know, if you want Husker football, wear a mask. The national basketball, there was like a group of national college basketball coaches sent out a video with John Calipari and Coach K and these massive figures in college basketball pleading people to wear masks. They're doing that because they want to coach in October and November and December, and they want to actually play.
Well, yes, I think that's right. And to be clear, like, we're not, I believe in mass science. I also understand how history works and how the study of this entire virus, we'll know so much more in 5 years than we know now about all of it, that we will be able to maybe understand a little bit better what happened in this moment, what didn't happen, why the United States is a little bit different than maybe a country like Italy or France, where the cases have gone way down, right? Mm-hmm. So the intensity that hit Italy, France, and Spain was really fierce, but the cases have gone way down. Why did they go way down? Well, those land masses are really small, and so a nationwide lockdown is easier to execute than it would be. There's certain of a national or federal strategy versus state-by-state strategy. I could be wrong. I think the state of Texas is bigger than one of those countries, and so we don't really look at Texas like a nation. Mm-hmm. We look at it as part of the United States, but there's different dynamics going on, including the vastness of our country. I had to write a piece about the America for Sunday, and I had to think about that for a moment too, just the vastness of America, the diversity in our country, the size of it, the differing experiences on differing timelines, all of those things. Like
Texas is bigger than France, just so I looked up land mass. Yeah. So it's to your point. Yeah.
The point being that there was more complexities in this conversation than with as it related to the United States, and then we're going to be in some other places. Brazil, which isn't as big as the United States, is suffering a similar sort of delayed reaction, and the situation in Brazil appears to be very serious. Italy and Spain and England are closer to what happened in New York City and Connecticut and New Jersey and Massachusetts in that little area of place. It went way up really fast, probably because there were more positive test cases than they even had time to log, and then it went down. We don't know, and we will probably only be able to speculate how many millions of people actually had the coronavirus in the Northeast. The death rates indicate to us that, yes, while they indicate essentially that a lot more people probably had it than we realize. And we just, so we, when we set records every day for numbers of test cases, we do that with the knowledge of there might have been 100,000 positive cases a day in New York City on March 3rd or March 4th or March 6th, and we just don't know. And we'll never know because they didn't get the tests.
Yeah, and I think it's important to think about too. I mean, even if the death rate doesn't necessarily spike and it currently goes of what it's currently going at, the more cases you have, that's still, I mean, if you consistently have more than 40,000 cases, that's such a ridiculously high number that that's going to make athletic directors, coaches, players, conference commissioners worry, because that's more potential for sick people. And liability, completely. And I understand the reaction of, well, this is how many tests that were positive, but there's more testing. And I understand that. I get it. That makes sense. At the same time, that doesn't discredit the fact that that means that one more person is sick, which means that it could spread to another person and to another person. And so,
right.
I don't think I've necessarily asked you this, Sam, but I just think in general, conference commissioners and coaches are just going to be worried that they're the one conference, or they are the one coach or whatever, in which a player gets hospitalized, or their university has, you know, they can contact trace to an athlete who got a professor sick or whatever, and they're the ones that are kind of culpable for it. I just feel like naturally they would be worried about that, and they wouldn't want to be that conference or that school in which that happened. You know what I mean?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Like, I Frost will say, well, Nebraska's all in, and we're fighting the fight, and the day that it may come down to, you know, like, is the Big Ten all in? Let's say in theory, and Frost didn't say this, but he didn't comment on this part of it, but what if the Big Ten says, well, Maryland says no, so we're all going to say no, because all for one, one for all. What does Nebraska do? Is Nebraska really just not going to play a season because Maryland, because Rutgers, because, I don't know, Northwestern? Which Northwestern doesn't need football. I mean, right. They're good at it. They've beaten Nebraska many times. The reputation of Northwestern is not rooted in its athletic programs. It's not. And so Northwestern may very well say, look, you know, this is what's going to happen with the Ivy League next week. The Ivy League doesn't need sports. It barely matters. I mean, it just doesn't matter. And so the Ivy League can easily say, the Ivy League could cancel sports for the next 5 years. And you know what? The same people be going to the Ivy League over the next 5 years that were going there, almost certainly going there anyway, because the Ivy League isn't in the business of taking, people with 2.7 GPAs, or even somebody like me. I wouldn't have gotten into an Ivy League school. My GPA was all right. So they're not in the business of doing that. They don't do that. And so the same people who would be going to the Ivy League are generally going to be the people who would have been going there if there were sports or not. But they're probably going to make that determination. And then there's going to be, you know, a sense of just, I don't know. Like, that's kind of where it stands right now. Mm-hmm. And I really do feel like if people saw more images of, well, there's a lot of people wearing masks, and we think the cases are going to go down in August and September. And by the way, they're probably going to go down anyway. They probably just are, probably. I think, but if leaders in the sport saw people wearing masks and saw the cases declining by mid-July to late July, I think they'd say, all right, we're going to give the season a shot, because it seems like people are complying now. Mm-hmm. But I think widespread coverage of non-compliance makes people who are in leadership say, we can't do this because we just can't trust the environment in which the college athletes return to.
Yeah, and I think the thing that might be frustrating too, especially for Husker fans, is like Nebraska has appeared to do nearly everything right. I mean, in terms of how they're able to test, how many tests they have, the quarantine, what you've talked with Scott Frost about, what Bill Moose has talked publicly about, their partnerships with UNMC. I mean, Nebraska seems like they're really, I mean, for lack of a better term, they got their shit together. And I think it would be frustrating.
They do.
And I think that it would be frustrating from Nebraska's perspective of they've got their shit together and they are ready and cases in Lincoln are down. And things are relatively okay. You could play football. You could be comfortable here in Lincoln. And then the season gets shut down because other universities are not. They don't have the money to do it. They don't have the resources Nebraska has, or they're not as competent for whatever reason. And
or they kind of punted.
I think they punted. Yes.
A lot of schools just kind of waited, and they're like, "So that's where it's at in July." Well, here we are.
Yeah.
You know, and they started bringing their guys back in June. It looks okay. And then all of a sudden, you know, they're back for a couple of weeks. People test positive. I don't think the positive tests are as big of a deal as some people in the media clearly do. But once you started seeing that, and then every report of a positive test was treated like a moral failure on the part of the university. I don't know what it is exactly, but that's when you started, we're not going to be able to have a season. And the reason that Nebraska was proactive in the way it did is because it avoided that.
Right.
Like its intention all along was to bring back the sport. And in having that intention, it was as safe as possible. And a lot of schools just kind of punted in May and June and figured they'd come back in mid to late June. Oklahoma's coming back this week.
And that's,
it isn't magic. It's not how it works.
And that's why college athletics is so much different and so much harder than professional, because you have each individual, essentially individual businesses running their own ship. And you have the business of the NBA telling everybody what to do, or NFL telling everybody what to do. And instead in college athletics, you have not only added element of these guys are amateurs and they're not all working under the exact same rules. And so I would be curious if it comes to a point where the conference said, I mean, what do you think Nebraska would do if the Big Ten said, we're not playing football, but if you guys want to play a handful of games with people around you, go for it. I mean, I think Nebraska would go for it.
Yes. And I think Nebraska would not only attempt to do it, I think they would pay for tests of other schools. Mm-hmm. They might say Wyoming. I don't know this for sure, but they might say Wyoming. Colorado State, K-State, North Dakota State, South Dakota State, USD, Northern Iowa. Where you at? Montana? Mm-hmm. Idaho? What's another school? Utah? Where you at? Yeah, I think it's possible. It's possible they could try to cobble together a schedule of willing partners and just do it on their own.
Yeah.
But again, that takes cooperation from the Big Ten, or the willingness of the Big Ten to say, well, you do what you need to do.
Mm-hmm.
And the challenge with that is if Nebraska, let's take Nebraska's name out of it. School A goes off and does that. Well, they're going to make their, how's the TV contract work?
Yeah. Yeah.
Is Nebraska able to go cut its own TV deal and get pay-per-view money or go to, you don't think ESPN or CBS or Fox would broadcast those games?
Mm-hmm.
You bet your rear end they would.
Mm-hmm.
That's the thing, is if you present them with the content and say, look, we're going to do this, you know, we're going to do Dana White's Fight Island, but we're going to do it in the middle of the United States, there'll be somebody show up to cover. Because they darn well know that there's going to be people who want to watch it on TV.
So the second question is there's been a lot of chatter this week too about a spring season. I don't know how much you want to get into that, but do you think that that's becoming more of a possibility, or do you think that that's just people kicking the can down the road?
I think to some degree, Chris, it's the latter, in the sense that it's an argument one can make to punt now.
Yeah.
In other words, well, we'll do this in the spring. Hard to see how you start a season. Okay, so let's say you were going to do it. You're going to move it to spring. Well, you're either actually moving it to winter, because spring is not – January 15th isn't the friggin' spring, okay? So if you're going to move it to spring, you're going to move it to late March. That's spring.
Mm-hmm.
And for what it's worth, I stopped calling it fall camp in football, like, 3 years ago. It's mm-hmm. training camp.
Yeah.
It happens in July and August. That ain't the fall, my friend. So I stopped calling it that because it isn't the fall. Well, moving football to the spring means moving it to March 20th. You're going to start a season in March and end it in what? June? And then you're going to come back in August and play another season?
Yeah. I mean, I even just
– So you got to start it in January.
I even just calculated it out. Like, let's say you even start in like March 6th, which like could, you know, you could maybe get a 50 degree day or whatever.
60, yeah.
You're still ending the season in end of May, beginning of June, depending on bye weeks and all that. And then you've got bowl games in July.
Right.
I mean, right. And then you start up again, maybe in October or something. Yeah. I mean,
well, you have a 2021 season, or you'd have to move that back and, you know, do these staggered schedules for a couple of years. I don't know what anybody's appetite is for that. So if you're talking about moving it, you'd be moving it to winter, theoretically.
Yeah, yeah. January to like March. Okay,
well, tell me how the virus is doing in January.
Right.
If it behaves anything like the flu, I don't know why we would be encouraged that it would be a better environment then. So there's this argument that's like, well, let's just move it to the spring. Well, I think that the way that I take that argument was, let's just not do it now, so that we don't have to think about it right now. And then we'll go and we'll putter around the offices for September and October and November, wishing we had done it, but knowing that we couldn't. And then we'll come back in January and, the cases again. You know, like the anecdotal reality, when does that change? I mean, Frost's point is well taken, right? At some point, you either say, we're waiting for the vaccine, and boy, we hope it comes, or you're like, we got to move forward with the possibility that an athlete will get sick. And if you never get to the second part of it, then you're basically waiting on Moderna and Pfizer and Oxford to come up with a treatment or a vaccine that tells, you know, public health scientists and university administrators and the media that they don't have to feel as bad about this now. I mean, that's how else do we get to that conversation if we can't at some point accept the possibility? And this isn't saying that, I'm not saying that people should accept it. I'm saying that the possibility, Frost brings it up, the possibility of someone getting sick from this isn't going to change in January or March from an anecdotal perspective,
mm-hmm.
right?
Mm-hmm.
It's not going to change.
Yeah.
It's going to be the same anecdote then than it is now.
And that's where I think that, I mean, this essentially comes down to, what are you willing to risk for college athletics? And that conversation gets really tricky and really slippery. The thing that I, you know, is there a possibility you could just start it and do half of a season, and that way you're done by October?
Sure.
Because that's kind of the best of both worlds, in my opinion.
You
get your money, you get.
The worry right now is starting, Chris.
Yeah, I guess. I guess my worry is finishing.
Right.
Because I think if it gets off, I think there's in my opinion, I think there's a better chance it starts than it does finish.
Right.
Because I could see a scenario in which there's one game and there's a giant outbreak, and then it goes under the two campuses, and then it's like, what are we doing? And they shut it down. And that's where my worry comes
from.
Imagine
you're walking down the bank of a river, and you get down to the bank of the river, and you want to cross to the other side. And the river is not necessarily deep, but how comfortable you feel about crossing that river is dependent on how fast the water is moving over the rocks you need to walk on to cross it. If the speed of the water is rapid-like, and it's moving like you would see on white water rapids, you ain't crossing that thing without a boat. You're not going on the rocks. If the water slows down to a trickle, guess what? You can still slip off one of the rocks, crack open your head, and go to the hospital as a result. The water slowing down does not remove the possibility of actually getting hurt as you cross that river. But you feel better about crossing it, and you might even get to the point where you say, anybody who does slip on the rock slipped of their own accord, henceforth we feel good. That's what the H1N1 flu must have been like in 2009, because there might have been a couple of games at most that were canceled. And that was somewhere along the lines of, well, that school screwed up because they had an outbreak, the end. But the H1N1 flu was a real thing, and it was a pandemic, but the season didn't get fobbed off. It kept going because the way that we looked at it, the way that it was covered, the way that the numbers, and believe me, the pandemic we have right now was much worse than H1N1, to be clear. But the way that we looked at it, we didn't see a rushing rapid of water going over those rocks. At this moment, on July 3rd, we see a rushing rapid of water.
So it's either cross and accept that you might fall, or wait for it to dry up and then walk across when there's no water there.
You won't cross it because you don't think you'll make it without falling.
Right.
Until the water dies down. And so where it's at right now, the virus is that water.
Right.
And you have 50,000 cases a day. And I understand where leaders and administrators are. They look at it and go, I'm not crossing that river. We're going to lose half our party if we do that. I mean, we're just, no way. No way. And of course, and you spend time on Twitter just like I do. You spend time on Twitter, everything looks like a Russian rabbit sooner or later.
Oh, yeah. No, yeah. Completely. I
mean, journalists hang out there, and we can turn anything into a crisis real fast. But this is not a manufactured crisis. This is a real thing, and I think you're seeing a natural response to, look, this is a big, bad deal, and if we don't play college football right now, I mean, we'll survive.
I think
some people are going to lose their jobs, but
– yeah, I think in general there needs –
people in charge won't lose their jobs.
I think that in general there needs to be a – because not to make this a societal thing, but we don't acknowledge – well in our society or appreciate changing your mind or like not having an immediate opinion like right now. And I think the difference is that people see information right now and make determinations on what should be happening at the end of August and what needs to be happening, which I think is probably happening at a, you know, at a higher level, is taking each week as its own little thing and then collectively putting that together and making a decision when a decision needs to be made. Like, what I don't understand, and I'm somebody who's a little bit more hesitant, but what I don't understand is seeing, hey, Nebraska has 8 cases, and saying, cancel football season. That doesn't quite make sense to me.
No.
However,
and people aren't saying it because of Nebraska.
Sure, right. But however, I mean, you will see that, though. No matter who it is, no matter what athletic department says, hey, we've got a couple, you know, we've got these cases or whatever, you will see people say, well, cancel everything. And that's not quite fair yet. I mean, like, that worries me. Like, any positive case worries me a little bit more. But at the same time, that doesn't make me say shut it all down. And I think that that's the problem, is that everybody feels like they have to make a decision right now. Right. And whatever you say right now, that's your decision no matter what. And if you're correct, then good for you. You're a good person. Right. And if you're wrong, then, like, what's the point of you existing at all? And the difference is there's more nuance.
That you can start training the players for a college football season. Here's what I would say. There's this lot of talk that there's got to be a decision made by mid-July. Yes and no. There does, but mid-July to August to mid-August may look a lot different. Mm-hmm. And you don't want to – the minute you cancel the season, reviving it is almost impossible. Because once you once you call something off, and this is just in life in general, you know, you're going to go out to dinner with friends. The minute you say you're not going to go, it's kind of hard to get back on. You're going to go.
Right.
And so it just is, right?
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
If you cancel something, it's canceled. And it's going to, like, you can call that person at the last minute and say, hey, what I was going to do, I don't have to do anymore. You still want to go? I don't know.
Yeah, not really. Right. Right.
And so once you cancel a football season, it's going to stay canceled. It's not going to – you're not going to necessarily be able to easily revive it. What might be more likely is that Power 5 leagues here in 3-4 weeks say, well, we're going to allow individual schools to do what they want to do, and they can do that, but we're not going to necessarily have what one would call an organized college football season, complete with playoff standings and these other things. If you want to go and play 8 to 10 games, you're assuming that risk. That's a local decision. You know, mm-hmm. Oklahoma State, you can do what you want to do. Nebraska, you can do what you want to do. And then you're responsible for negotiating your TV contracts and there you go. And that wouldn't that be fascinating?
Yes, it just opens up a brand new, like, it's so, one, it'd be fascinating. Two, what concerns people, I think, a little bit, though. So Kansas just released that they're suspending voluntary workouts due to increase in COVID tests or COVID positives. And that's where I think the concern comes in, is if enough universities who have all these resources can't contain, or it gets to a point where they have to suspend, and then it becomes, well, who's able to work out when, and what's the competitive advantages and disadvantages? That's where I think it kind of becomes really, really tricky, increasingly tricky. So that's just worth something that just broke right now. At the same time, though, I think, to your point, for Nebraska, it has to be a little bit more frustrating. And part of it, I mean, Nebraska in general is a smaller population, and football is very high on the priority list. And so it makes sense why they would take this extremely seriously and do everything that they possibly can to make sure that football happens. So that's why I think if indeed there is not a normal football season, which I don't imagine there will be, Nebraska, like if they say, hey, we're going to cancel season, Nebraska's first phone call, I think, is like, okay, well, who wants to play?
Yeah.
It's almost like saying, like, hey, we're having an open gym here at Memorial Stadium. If you guys want to come play, we'll pay for you guys come down. Let's do it, because we feel comfortable in the way that we're doing things, and we've, you know, so let's do it. And I think Nebraska will probably get a little bit of flack for that. But if you just look at the way that they've gone, Twitter. But I think it just, if you look at the way that they've gone through things, that's what they're going to try and do.
Right. Well, they get Twitter flack.
Right, which doesn't mean anything.
I think people pay attention to it. I think people pay attention to what the media thinks, and there's a collective energy that exists on social media. And I think, you know, I mean, you can just look at what's happened at Oklahoma State and Kansas State. Like, university leaders have to pay attention to what.
Sure, sure. I guess I just mean
when it comes from their athletes.
Yeah, I guess I just mean, like, I think Nebraska would be in a situation where it would look like, whoever Creighton was playing in the Big East tournament, which was basically the last game that was playing. Yeah. That's what it would look like, where there would be some people that were saying, this is great. Like, this is the last sport that I'm watching. This is great. And another half being like, what are they doing? And so it would be interesting, but I would not be surprised if Nebraska would try and do something like that.
Well, I don't know. I mean, that could possibly happen. You know, we've talked about a lot here. As Pam Beasley would say, we've said a lot of things. but I think that's where the conversation is at this moment. Like, would conferences free up individual institutions? And there's only a handful of independents: Notre Dame, Connecticut. I don't know, a couple others that I can't name. BYU. But would conferences free up their member schools to go out and play their own games? And would Nebraska be one of those schools? And once you were untethered from your conference and it came down to individual schools deciding whether they were going to play or not, how many schools do we think would actually play?
Yeah.
How many? Especially when, if the conferences allowed the schools to negotiate their TV contracts, and, you know, Alabama could say, well, look, we're not going to have a college football playoff this season, but who wants to play us? Anybody want to play us? Yeah, I think people want to play Alabama. Or, you know, whatever. I mean, schools could just say, look, we know what we can control. We can control this. We're going to play. And we'll take the heat and the liability if anything happens, and there you go.
Well, yeah, and that's the risk, though, too, is if there are only 12 schools that decide they want to play,
right?
You better be damn sure that you're doing it the right way, because everybody's watching.
Yeah,
and if one thing goes wrong, if one kid gets hospitalized, if there's a breakout at your campus or whatever,
right,
it's going to be bad. And so that's why you have to make there's an inherent risk that goes with that too.
That's right. But, you know, it's an interesting hypothetical to explore, because the minute that you untether a school and you let them kind of make that decision, I'm not sure there'd be quite as much criticism, because I think there's a lot of criticism for the institution of college football and the idea of the sport being writ large across the American landscape. But I think if there's places in this country where it isn't being hit as hard, and let's say by mid-August the state of Nebraska is down, and we don't know, there could be more, is down to 15 or 20 cases a day, people are going to say, well, you know, maybe we can do this. Maybe we can play a football season. Maybe we can do this. Maybe this school over here isn't allowed to, but the governor here says it's okay. We could be going into fascinating times, Chris.
At that point, too, it's kind of like, well, then what's the point of being in a conference at all? Now you get the money, and like that's a insane statement. But at the same time,
schedules and all that.
Yeah, I get all that, but at the same time, then it's like, okay, well, you're kind of working as your own mini conference for a year.
And we haven't even talked about volleyball. Like it's possible that football can't go off, but they say volleyball can.
I agree. I also think
possible.
The same could be. Maybe the same could be said about basketball, but it depends. Basketball, I think, is a fascinating thing, too, because from everything I've gathered, they're basically just saying, like, you know what? We're going to do what football does. Like, whatever football's going to do, we'll follow their lead. But Rick Pitino tweeted out something this week about starting play in January, and that's something that I've heard before as well, and that would make sense in some ways, and that would be easier because then it's just, okay, it's your regular season. You just cut out the non-conference, and you can still finish by March and whatever.
There's ways I can just envision in my mind volleyball being played in the sense of, you know, you make the front row wear a mask, or you have some, instead of the net, you have a shield. And, you know, there's a little bit of net at the top of the shield, but it's a shield, which changes the game a little bit, but you're separated by a net. You know, in theory,
I could also see soccer.
Yeah, but in soccer, there's like in volleyball, there's contact at the net.
Yeah, it's not like people
wrestling for a, like, you know, in soccer is a physical sport. You have people literally breathing in each other's faces trying to get a ball away from the other. Mm-hmm. It's kind of weird
Yeah, and we don't have to get into this because I feel like it's been talked about far too much. But then there's also the fan discussion.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
I do.
Because speaking of volleyball, like, they've talked about playing at PBA because you can socially distance more there. Like, they're that's pretty far down the line of talking about
fans. I think are going to be tough, Chris.
That's going to be really difficult, I think.
That's going to be tough unless you're signing waivers and, you know, agreeing to say, hey, you know, or you're mandating masks when they come in and signing a waiver saying, hey, well, you're wearing a mask, but we can't guarantee that you're going to that you won't get sick. I don't know. We'll just see. Well, that was a fun discussion for a good hour. To summarize this, right now I don't think a lot of people necessarily know what's going to happen. But if I were saying, you know, when Governor Ricketts says, if you want college football in the fall, wear a mask, understand that it's not like, you know, you could still not have college football if you don't wear a mask. It's possible because you can't control what the state of Texas or California or whatever does. But at the same time, I think the people around the sport and elected leaders would feel a hell of a lot better about having a season if they saw the kind of compliance from citizens that indicate that they can do some of the things that we're accustomed to doing. That's just the best way to put it. And maybe people don't want to hear it or they don't like that answer, but at some point, I think there needs to be some level of confidence that American people are kind of getting this. And even if they don't feel like the masks, even if American people don't think the masks are as valuable as the medical community does, for what it was, I do. I wear the mask when I'm out. But even if they don't, I think you have to come to a point where you appreciate that the people in charge do. Sometimes you got to do things because that's what you got to do. You got to do things you're told to do, whether you want to do them or not.
Yeah.
Americans don't like doing that, but
I think in general, yeah, they're looking for compliance, and they're again, I just keep thinking about liability. Like, they want to feel comfortable that if it happens, the worst case scenario doesn't happen, because we're, I mean, this, it's like playing with fire. Yeah. And they don't want everything set on fire. So,
all right, let's talk about basketball for a minute.
Okay.
Cause this also involves coronavirus. Two basketball players, Ivan Wadrago and Thorbjørn
Arnarson.
Yeah.
I think I added, an N in there.
They're not here.
And they're not.
And you wrote a story about that. It was good. What have you learned? It was an interesting story.
Thank you. Essentially they're at home in France and Iceland. They have been there ever since classes were put online, and I just kind of thought to myself, okay, at the beginning of June, we were this big thing about voluntary workouts starting, and what does that look like, and who's going to be there, and the small storyline was, well, international students are going to be there, and so June was ending, and I was like, well, I just want to check in back in on this. So I texted some people and said, you know, do you guys really know a timeline of when Thor and Ivan are going to be back? And they're like, nope, like we have no timetable whatsoever of when they're going to return. And so part of this is nothing really to do with Nebraska. It's the U.S. government. And the U.S. government currently has restrictions on who is allowed into the country. And France, actually, where Ivan is, has really strict guidances of who can come into France, who can leave France. On Wednesday, they basically, there were a select few countries which you could travel between. In France, the United States was not on that list because cases continue to go up. France's cases are significantly dropping. Iceland is in the single digits in terms of new cases a day. So essentially, Ivan and Thor are at home, just kind of waiting for the go ahead. And
is the United States not allowed people from Iceland to come back in?
They have not. So there's,
or is Iceland not allowing people to go to the U.S.?
So the U.S. currently, they have a ban on travel from entry from foreign citizens from the EU. And I think it's called the Schengen countries, which is what Iceland is. It's like a part of those. I don't know.
I just learned something.
Yeah. I was talking with, I was talking with John Niatawa about this.
Can
about
you say that again?
S-C-H-E-N-G-E-N.
Nah, I don't want to spell it. Schengen?
I don't know. I was talking with John about this. I was like, we're sports writers on these like U.S. embassies websites. Like, what are we doing? But the fact of the matter is, regardless how it's pronounced, Iceland is part of those countries. Right. And so there's a ban on entry for that. So
that's interesting.
It is. And it's also, I mean, so they're basically just sitting at home, not sitting at home. I know that they have posted on social media of them working out. I know that Thor has the means to go work out somewhere. And Ivan has posted stuff in a gym before.
Yeah.
So it's a bummer because it would be really nice if they were back. The thing that I'm concerned about and why I wanted to check in is because since this is the U.S. government, this is governments talking to each other.
Yeah.
That can take a long time to figure out. And you hope that they're going to be able to be here by the time classes start and they can enroll in classes and they can be on campus. And, you know, practices at Nebraska start July 20th, I believe. They can actually start practicing. And you would really like to have those two guys there. Right. So we'll just have to kind of keep an eye on that and we'll see. I know that there's some hope that because of the amount of international students there are in the United States, particularly college international students, there is a hope that there's some type of waiver or some type of visa or something that you could apply for where if you were a student in the US, you could come back and quarantine and then go back to your university. So if that's the case, then Thor and Ivan would obviously be part of that. So we'll hope that they actually come back. And then Shamil Stevenson actually isn't on campus. He is back home. Basically, they gave everybody, like, if you guys want to come, you can. But if you feel more comfortable at home, you can. And Shamil stayed home. But it does not appear to be a Kobe King situation where he comes and then leaves and they don't know if he's coming back. With Shamil, they feel pretty good that he's going to come back. So,
1,855 cases in Iceland.
Total?
Total.
Isn't yesterday, like, I mean, it's been in the single digits, has it not?
You have to. I'm on a podcast. I'm sorry.
Say Sammy wants a Danish after he had a donut. Can he have that?
Yeah.
What? He just had a donut.
My kids are in here arguing about donuts.
Ugh!
See? My daughter, Mary.
Oh, that was fantastic.
Wasn't it, though?
Yeah.
So in Iceland, there are 5,436 cases per 1 million population.
Yeah.
And, you know, like in Nebraska, it's way more than that, incidentally.
Yeah.
Like 10,000.
Yeah. And in France, it's gone down quite a bit as well.
Well, yeah. France is, yeah. I mean, I can understand. I mean, France is not, doesn't want its folks to travel to the United States. Is that right?
Right. Yes. Yes. So it's kind of, that's the thing where the United States doesn't want people from Iceland because it's part of this conglomeration. And France is like, you're not going to the U.S. And if you are, it's like, it's, you have to have a specific waiver and you have to be like a EU national or a healthcare worker or all these things. I mean, and Ivan doesn't necessarily fit in any of those categories.
Nebraska has 10,056 cases per 1 million of population, which incidentally still ranks, I think, in the nation's top 15. Let me see here. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. One of them is District Columbia. 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12. And so it ranks 11th among states and 12th among states in District Columbia in cases per 1 million. Surprising, huh? The population.
Sure.
Surprising, huh? Like, Arizona, this gives you a sense of how many cases there are in Arizona now, is now above Nebraska. It wasn't for months.
Yeah.
It is at 12,620. Texas is still way down the list, as is, and Florida is still, well, it's not way down the list. Florida will soon surpass Nebraska eventually.
Yeah. Well, Nebraska was one of the first, like, I mean, that it was.
Right.
It started extremely.
That was related around a specific industry. The same is true of South Dakota. Uh-huh. Right. And so it wasn't a generalized everyone everywhere is getting it. It was a very specific, I mean, other people were getting it, but meatpacking plants drove the numbers in Nebraska. That's why, you know, Dakota County and Hall County, which don't have a lot of people in them relative to, you know, Douglas or Lancaster County, were, you know, the highest case, where sometimes were some of the highest counties in the nation for, you know, per capita cases. And that's going to remain the same for a while. So, like, you know, what's going on right now in Texas and Florida and Georgia is kind of what was going on in Nebraska back in, when was that, May? Late April.
Yeah.
Would we have felt comfortable about playing college football on May 5th when there were more than 600 cases?
Right. And that's why I think this is difficult, because if you just look at Nebraska, you're like, well, yeah, Nebraska's doing well, so why wouldn't we have football? Well, that's not really that doesn't compute, because it's not one to one, and you've got, you know, schools from South Dakota or schools from Ohio or Indiana or, you know, wherever coming into town, or you're going there. I mean, it's just a different, and this is something. I mean, something I was talking to my dad about this, you know, 2 months ago, and we just came to the realization of, like, this is something that's not going to go away for, like, another probably, like, 18 months in terms of, like, the conversation about coronavirus and COVID and spread and everything. Like, this isn't going away once football starts. It's not like everything's normal again. I mean, this is going to continue for a long time. To the point where, I mean, even next football season, like, let's say, you know, there is a season or there isn't a season. Like, 2021, there will still be some sort of conversation about COVID, I think.
Yeah.
And the worry about it. And so that's why the significant amount of cases, though there might be more testing, that's fantastic, you know, that we're catching it. But more cases means that it's going to continue to be around. And the longer it's going to continue to be around, the more worried people are going to be about playing sports.
That's right. Let's talk recruiting. Nothing going on in the basketball front, is there?
Not particularly, no. They got Elijah Wood.
The roster's good to go.
The roster's good to go, yeah. But in terms of, I mean, they've offered a handful of, like, 2022 kids, but, I mean, there's nothing been serious.
Did they offer a kid since the last time we had a podcast? They did, Isaac Trout, right? Grant Allen?
I don't think we talked about him last time, but yeah, they offered him.
Have they offered anybody else 2022?
Maybe one.
I know they've got some offers in the state out, but they offered him before Isaac Trout, right?
When they offer, they kind of do it in like 4 or 5 day spans. And I don't think they've done that as of late.
Yeah.
Maybe one or two kids, but I can't think of it off the top of my head.
And the football recruiting front, there is a receiver, Latrell Neville, who's going to be announcing tomorrow where he's going to commit. I think that announcement will come at 1 p.m. A lot of people think he's going to pick Nebraska. I think there's a good chance that that's going to happen. 6'3", 195. Some places have him at 6'4", 200, whatever. He's tall. He probably needs to put on a little bit of weight. But he's got some versatility. The interesting thing about Neville is his frame, is A, pretty good, and B, he's kind of done some different things. So he's played a little slot. He's played a little running back. He's got some nice maneuverability in the middle of the football field. And not every guy who's that size does. Some of them are true outside receivers, but they're not going to operate a ton on screen passes, or if they do, it'll be somewhat infrequent. But Neville has shown, kind of a versatility to be able to play in a slot, to be able to, go over the middle, to carry something on a jet sweep, things like that. Kind of reminds me, if you're talking the best case scenario, reminds me a little bit of a Tyler Johnson, who I think is a real good player, because Tyler Johnson was 6'2"-ish, and Johnson could play in the slot, he could run, they could put him in the backfield. He was versatile that way. Whereas the other guy they got, Rashad Bateman, who's going to be a big star in the NFL, and he's got one more year at Minnesota, is kind of a classic 6'3", 215-pound outside receiver who's going to be just a star. I don't know if Johnson's going to be sort of a special teams kind of guy, number three, number four receiver at the NFL level, more than likely. But you need players like that. You need guys that can, especially in college. It's great to have really versatile and gifted slot receivers who are also big guys, because you can kind of use them. They'll flex a tight end out like that. So Neville's interesting. He was committed to Virginia Tech, dropped them because the quarterback who was committed there dropped them. He's also from Houston, just like Neville is. That quarterback then went to Auburn. I don't know if Auburn had an offer open for Neville to follow that quarterback, and so I think Nebraska has got a really good chance of picking this one up as a result. Of course, Nebraska's got a quarterback in its class, and they might add another walk-on like Jackson Burkhalter, who in theory could come to Nebraska now, because his brother Christian is an outside linebacker prospect for 2021. Jackson's 1 year older. Maybe 2 years, 1 year older for sure, and was going to go to a prep school to try to, drum up interest after getting hurt his junior year, his senior year. But he can, in theory, come now and be a part of this class, if that's – and walk on now, if that's the way they want to swing. But sure. But Christian Burkhalter's, I think, a week or two off to making his final decision, which means Jackson Burkhalter is too. But Latrell Neville is the guy that I think you may see join Nebraska's recruiting class on Saturday. I think they'll get a couple more commits in July. Recruiting's not going to stop. I think you're going to see a lot of kids commit in July and August and then take those visits in September, maybe. If there's not a college football season, I don't know when they're going to take their visits.
Yeah.
Maybe never. And those poor kids, they'll have to – they'll extend the signing date or whatever. They'll give them until April to decide or whatever. But
man, it'd be hard to be a
– especially if college football is canceled. Mm-hmm. Just be like, well, I got nothing to go see, so I got to make a decision based on the ones I have in front of me. And what I have in front of me, here's where I'm going to go.
It's too bad. That'd be really hard to be a high school kid right now for many reasons.
You can, some of these kids have done this.
Yeah.
You can start seeing them just go pay for themselves and just go and
look. Yeah, yeah. I can see that.
And the other thing to watch at least as it relates to Nebraska's recruiting class, is just let's just watch and see how things turn out at Iowa. They're investing. I don't know what they're launched. They've launched an investigation into Iowa football.
Iowa has.
Yeah, they hired a law firm not long after they dismissed Chris Doyle or whatever you want to call that separation agreement. So they've been they had a law firm, Hush Blackwell, that came in and is investigating them and preparing a report. Depending on that report, you know, you just want to see if maybe Kirk Ferentz is, you know, his job is safe or not. Of course, if things get shook up there, there's some guys in that Iowa class that Nebraska recruited and probably would go re-recruit, if that makes sense. Some good players. Mm-hmm. So that's something to watch too. Probably not today, although, you know, it's a Friday news dump. we'll probably get some Friday news dump today at about 5 o'clock. Happy 4th of July.
Oh, it's a 4th of July. Yeah, it's a 4th of July Friday.
You have some news. For people who don't know what a Friday news dump is, there's a common practice to dump bad news on a Friday because people are going first. Journalists are fatigued by Friday afternoon and they don't really want to delve into something all the rest of the evening. And so they'll kind of write it up and then they'll kind of try to forget it because, hey, we're human too. But also people don't really like to talk about the news as much over the weekend. They like to talk about, you know, going out or eating or watching a movie or playing a game or whatever. And by Monday, you've forgotten whatever the Friday news was because then there's something bad that happens on Monday.
Right.
So the Friday news dump. So you never know. Maybe something probably won't be about Iowa, but there'd probably be something at about 4:48. Breaking news.
At some
bad point. News.
Do you have any quick thoughts on Scott's thoughts about Adrian?
Oh, yeah. Well, it doesn't surprise me that he had those thoughts. It does surprise me a little bit that he said them out loud.
Mm-hmm. I thought the same thing.
It was a second or third question, and it wasn't my question that prompted it. I kind of started by saying, well, how's he doing, you know? Like, how's he, you know? And like, oh, and there was like, well, you're going to ask a football question. I'm like, well, you know, you brought him back in March. I mean, he was kind of like your first guy back. Obviously, you wanted him to be a leader and be the first guy in this process. And he's been here all summer. And that's when Frost said something about him being primed. And then the question was like, well, why is he primed? And that's when Frost said, well, you know, and he kind of compared Martinez's prep from 2018 to 2019.
Mm-hmm.
And it was a good question. And Frost gave an honest answer. First time you've ever kind of seen him say that about Martinez.
Yeah,
okay.
Or about one of his own like recruits, his own guys.
Yeah, excluding Maurice Washington.
Sure. Yeah. But I also think it was something. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It was. I don't know. I don't think it's necessarily a bad thing saying that about your quarterback. But it was interesting because he has been so complimentary of he's doing the best he can. He's doing this. Everybody around him isn't playing as well. This is what's going on. Blah, blah, you know, all these things. And now is the first time we've heard like, well, he wasn't maybe doing what he needed to be doing.
And that's an interest. You know, he didn't go – I think there was maybe another question, and he kind of deflected that. I'd be curious to know, you know, like, from Adrian's perspective, okay, well, what is – when he says that, what does that mean to you? What do you think he's – what do you think in your own mind you didn't do as well as you could? And, you know, I thought in the very first game last season, Martinez was not as good as he could have been. The snaps sucked. Clearly, it's not fair to a quarterback to have to be catching snaps all over the place. But he threw a couple passes in that game that were not – they just weren't good throws.
I mean,
you know, one into the middle of the field that wasn't intercepted was maybe the worst pass he's thrown in 2 years.
Yeah.
Where he threw it into about six guys and, you know, none of them caught it. But it's like, what are you doing?
Like, there was a game – there was a game last year. So there's this weird routine where I go down on the field and before the game and just hang out, and Mario Verduzco just like walks over and we chat. And I remember asking him once, and this isn't anything that he hadn't said, you know, publicly in the media. And Mario was always very, very nervous before games anyway. But when you ask him, like, hey, how's Adrian doing? Or whatever, the thing he would always say is like, well, you know, his eyes. I need to know where his eyes are. And his eyes haven't been good. Not blah, blah, blah. So that's that when Frost said lacks in
preparation. Do we lose me?
Oh, I think I'm not sure. But regardless, I'm going to just keep talking. That was whenever he said the lack of preparation. That's what I thought of, was maybe there was a reading coverages or reading the defense and not being quite ready for that side of things. We lost Sam in the midst of talking about Adrian, but I think that we are going to wrap it up here. Thank you for listening, as always. Thank you to our sponsor. Have a really good 4th of July weekend. Be safe. Spend some time with family. Socially distance. Wear your mask. We'd love to have sports. We would super, super love to have sports. So please do what you can, your small part. Nebraskans obviously have been doing a very good job, so continue to do that. We will be back next week. It will likely be Evan and I and Sam to talk about whatever the next week looks like. It seems like we're going to have more and more clarity as these weeks in July go on in terms of sports coming back. So we will hope to have more information on that, and we'll kind of update you on the coverage we have. So thank you again, listeners. We'll talk to you next week.